What? I didn't hear anything. Hold on.
Yeah, Melody, no worries if you can't do all 2 hours. The second hour is always optional. So, whenever you can join us, we're happy to have you join us. So, thank you. So, Kumanasik, I'm just going to mute you while we get going because I think your mute is going off and on. Oh, there we go. Okay, so welcome, everybody. This is our final call out of four calls, wow, for RP 102 Evaluation in Recreation. And I'd like to acknowledge that I'm hosting this call from the traditional territory of the Tonlandun First Nation and Tonquachin Council. And it's pretty sunny here, but boy, if you were on the call earlier, you would have seen Iqaluit, and the sunshine looks beautiful there with all the snow. So maybe Kumanasik can show us when he gets off the bus. So my apologies from last week. I had to cancel a conference call due to an emergency, which has since resolved itself, pretty much. So I'm happy to share that. So what I did instead is I did post a short video for you to watch that explained the content from last week. And it explained about collecting data, or data. I say it both ways. So not a lot of information, but some information for you to work from, and we can talk a bit more about it this week. But what we're going to do is we're also going to look at how we make good use of data, because there's not much point in doing an evaluation if it's not useful to us or we can't use what we collect. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to do a quick round of introductions for those of you that are able to. If you're in a place where you can't talk or can't type in the chat, don't worry about it. I'm guessing that's Kumanasik for now, and possibly Holly maybe, I'm not sure. And anyways, what I was going to ask you is just to share a consideration that came to mind for you about what you would consider when you're choosing and using evaluation tools or tools to collect data. So just something that you might think about. One of the things, I'll start off, and then on my screen I see Adam. I'll skip Kumanasik for now. Holly, you can post in the chat if you want to, unless you're able to unmute. Then we'll go to Melanie and Raquel. That's how I see you guys on my screen in my circle, or square, I guess it is. So before we go to Adam, one of the things that I think about that comes to mind often when I'm choosing and using the data collection tools is how complicated are they? I've used some before or have done some myself that perhaps take too long or the language is too challenging for even me. So I often look at, are they simple? Do they get to the point? Are they doing what I want them to do? So those are my considerations. Adam, I'd like to invite you, and if you can't, if nothing comes to mind, you can just ask, that's okay. What sort of considerations would you have when choosing a tool to collect data for evaluation?
Not sure if this is what you're getting at, but I think beginning with what is you're trying, not assuming what the data will reveal, but what is the type, what is the purpose of the data collection? What is it that you're trying to achieve through analyzing that data and then working backwards from that to ensure that the tool is going to provide the type of data that can lead to having confidence in the answer, if that makes sense.
Well, it actually does make sense because I replied to a couple of people's posts last week, or from last week, I replied to them yesterday, Melanie's and also Nathan's, about evaluation questions. And that's why I feel those evaluation questions are that in-between piece, and it's sort of like what you're alluding to. You need to have good evaluation questions in order to reach your purpose, but also they should drive what you're choosing, what your data collection, what your tools are that you're using to collect data. So I don't know if that's kind of what you were getting at. I think you're thinking that it ends, but you have to work backwards because it has to meet the purpose that you're intending it for.
Yeah, and I guess just envisioning that there's a reason that you're conducting your evaluation or there's something you're trying to get, and just if your data collection goes as planned, will you have results that can give you a confident answer to your evaluation question?
Yeah, because it needs to be that match, right? Like, it needs to match all the way along to get what you're after and to be confident, as you said, in that you're getting what you need to get, because sometimes you can end up, if you don't choose the right tool, you can end up with different information or information that's not as useful.
And I suppose not only the right tool, but the right source. Maybe that's something you're getting to, but just as an example, I won't go into the details too much, but there was a set of options presented as a range of concerns involving gender equity in sport in the NWT. There was input from a number of attendees of a workshop just using dots, you know, six dots, which they assess as high or low. And you end up with something from that, but the source of that came from, there's a lot of self-selection that goes into attending a workshop on gender equity in sport, which may not then be reflective of a broader prioritization of those various options. So at the end of the day, it's unclear whether or not the data that derives from that exercise is of great use or not.
Yeah, and that links to the conversation we had with Nathan a couple of weeks ago. I think it was Nathan, or maybe it was somebody else. but you really got to ask the people that that have that lived experience. So that's part of it too. So thank you, Wally. I'm not sure if you want to unmute and answer the question, or if you want to pop in the chat. It's up to you. And then we'll go to Melanie, then Raquel, Nathan, and Nisha. And while Holly's either popping in the chat or the timing, that's right. The timing of a tool might take longer to use. Like, for example, one-on-one interviews get really great information, but it takes longer to analyze it, especially if you have open-ended questions. Or also if you're doing those one-on-one interviews, it can take a long time to get 10 of them, for example, done. Thanks, Holly. Melanie, how about you? Did you want to jump in? Do you have a consideration that you have when you choose and use data collection tools?
I would use, for example, surveys to reach a broader demographic in certain cases, and then have maybe more like interviews to gain more in-depth knowledge about certain details we need to figure out
It's like we talked about, and you also wrote, I think, in your first post about doing a needs assessment for women. And what you explained is you would start with a survey, but then you would dig deeper with focus groups or interviews or things like that. And I think it's really important, that's a really good point, when you choose a data collection tool, not to choose just one fairly broad one, like Adam mentioned, with the dotmocracy, those dots are called, but to choose a couple of different ones so you can really get at the information that you're looking at in different ways. And there's a big word for that called triangulation. You don't need to know what that means, but it just means that good evaluation uses more than one way to get that information. So thanks, Melanie.
Can I add something? Like, there is, like, I'm not quite sure who wants to do the needs assessment for their recreation center, but we are planning, I'm planning something, or want to put it forward to our CEO and a city councilor as well, because I think, for example, there, like, to have, like, this is also what we discussed just lately, is like using certain tools, like, for example, surveys or interviews, to also include in or give community the feeling to include them into decision making, to increase maybe support or pride into the things that are important for the community, so they feel they have all been asked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Yeah, so that comes back to sort of your outcomes that you're aiming for, that you can have additional outcomes outside the scope of that evaluation that makes people feel a little bit more included, makes their voice feel heard, things like that. Thanks. Raquel, I'm not sure if you're busy or not. Oh, you're having issues connecting. Okay, so I'll let you pop in the chat. I don't know if you can hear me or not. Nathan, what we're doing, we're just welcoming each other. And we're talking about considerations for choosing and using data collection tools. And I'm just wondering if I can use your example, because I wrote you a fairly lengthy response yesterday. So maybe it's kind of been going around this topic of evaluating the Baker Lake Youth Gaps Initiative, which ties into the outside looking in. And I think that there's different things that are there. So what I suggested to you, Nathan, and it's similar to what maybe Melanie's saying and Adam as well, is that you want to make sure that a consideration is that you involve the voices of the people that experienced that program as well as people that have maybe observed the change. So, you know, it's important to have different perspectives and bring them together. Another consideration in Nathan's case, and maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, Nathan, and I'll let you jump in a sec, but could also be if you're asking youth to share their personal experiences as part of an evaluation, you need to be concerned with sort of privacy, confidentiality, and consent, those sorts of things, and making sure that your data collection tools respect that and how you do it. Anything to add to that, Nathan? Sorry, I just didn't think you wanted me to put you on the spot right away. So.
Oh, no, no. Oh, yeah. Like everyone said, too. The problem I have is focusing. I want to put so much information all into one that I always get lost in my process, or I always lose the mission statement or the meaning of the whole thing, and then there's like too much information. So I got to learn to focus on one part of it.
Yeah.
I can't really get the outcome until months from now anyway, so that's the other thing too. But all right, thanks.
Thank you. And yeah, exactly. Like, you really need to focus it. So it comes back to what Adam said about really understanding what your purpose is and making sure that the data you collect and how you analyze it and how you plan to use it is all connected back to that purpose. I do see a few spinning wheels on my screen, so I'm going to post the phone number and the access code in the chat. So for those of you, if you're like Raquel and having difficulty joining, feel free to phone in, but you'll have to make sure that you mute yourself on the computer so that there's not a feedback between your phone and your computer. Nisha, I see a spinning wheel for you. I'm not sure if it works for you to talk or not. And to share a consideration for choosing and using data tools, collection tools.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yeah.
Okay, maybe I'll just keep my video up. I don't know if it's been said yet, but similar to, who was it, Holly? I think it was Holly that mentioned time, or time to do it. I'd also want to add maybe capacity. Maybe you don't have a bunch of capacity to make a survey and a bunch of other different tools that you need for evaluation, because they do take time and request needs. So.
Yeah, capacity and also a certain level of expertise. So if you're facilitating focus groups or interviews, those sorts of things, you also need to have an understanding of how to structure those and do them. So it's not always that easy for people to do. So thank you for sharing that. So in the shared tool or the shared document that I did post last week, there's a couple of comments in there. You guys can add some more just to think through those things. So for example, somebody said for focus groups, you're going to most likely collect qualitative information from people, and you can use it to sort of prove your outcomes, report on funding, share stories. Focus groups can be fairly low cost, or if people are expecting honorariums, they might be a higher cost. So keep that in mind. Observation can be qualitative or quantitative, because you might want to count, like observations to be counting the number of behaviors that are a certain behavior. And definitely, usually it's an observation of people during programs or events. And Adam, that must be you, that added the democracy, is that right? Thank you. So, democracy is a big word, but I love it. It's simply giving people stars or dots and getting their opinions. It's a really nice, fast way to do things, but as Adam mentioned, it just gives you a little bit of a snapshot. So, Adam popped a few things in that document. So, again, that document, if you want to know where to access it, I did put a post in activity number 9 forum, and you can find it there, but I'll actually copy it once more and pop it in the chat so those of you who joined, since it's right there if you'd like to see it. So thanks for taking the time to reflect on some of those different tools, as well as the type of data you collect with that tool, where the data comes from, the timing, as Holly mentioned, and also things about analysis, because you got to think all these things through. So for those of you who have posted your part A of your evaluation plan, you'll notice that I really zoomed in on your purpose or your goal, your focus, and your questions. So part B actually asks you to consider if there's any revisions you need to do to your evaluation questions at the beginning before you move into the rest of it. So those questions are sort of that, the purpose and goals and the questions are the critical piece that links all this together to make sure you're not wasting your time, wasting money, wasting other people's time, or getting information that you're not able to use. So having said that, the next note in my script is, remember, a good evaluation is one that's useful. So there's no point in wasting people's time filling out questionnaires or participating if you're not going to take the time to learn from what the information you get or use what you learn to make changes. People are happy to participate if they know that their participation is going to mean something. So think of data as sort of bite-sized pieces of information. I'm just going to share my screen here too while I or present files. Hopefully this doesn't interfere with all of you when I share a screen here, so I need to go all the way to you. Okay, so think of data as kind of bite-sized pieces of information. So with all those little bite-sized pieces of information, to make it useful, we have to work with it. So it's kind of like having all your ingredients for a recipe before you put them together in a way that works. So slide 51 that I'm putting here, some of you may not be able to see it if your internet's slow, but it shows that we make sense of our data by doing three things to it. So first we have to organize it once we've collected it, then we need to analyze it, and then we need to interpret it. So we're going to start by thinking about ways that we organize and analyze data. And I'm going to give you an example, and then I'm going to ask you guys to share your thoughts on this. I'll pop the question in the chat. And I started with Adam last time, so I'm going to go to Holly first, and you can pop in the chat after I've given my example, and then we'll go Melanie, and we'll go around that way in the similar order. So my question to you is, can you describe one way that you might organize and or, you can put an or in there, analyze information or data? So I'll share what I do, and then Holly, you feel free to pop in the chat, and Melanie, then you can share or pop in the chat after Holly. So what I like to do is, I like colored sticky notes. Sometimes I have them all over my walls, and I use them for different types of data or different themes, and Nathan at Kuminopic in Ottawa saw how I use colored sticky notes as well. Oh, Nathan didn't make it there, so Kuminopic did, so color-coded, yes. I find it easy to put colored stickies up on the walls and you can move them around. So when I'm looking for sort of where there's similarities, either I'll color-code them or I'll move them around into groups under headings, things like that. And that's how I start to sort of make sense of data, especially if it's qualitative and not quantitative. So Kuminopic popped in the chat that he likes color-coded things. Holly, I'll let you pop in the chat. Melanie, how do you organize and or analyze information that you collect through your data?
Put it in an Excel spreadsheet? How I do it? I don't know what else. I think sticky notes are too messy for me.
That's okay, because we're all different, right?
Yeah.
If you work with a lot of data, like from interviews, and there's a lot of it transcribed, one thing with an Excel spreadsheet is you can start to put it into themes. So if I have, like, 5 or 6 sentences in each cell for different people. I can read through it and then try and come up with different themes, like this one relates to physical activity, this one relates to healthy eating, or whatever it happens to be. So you can use it that way, and then you can, Excel lets you sort quite nicely and find things too.
And you can pull easy statistics from it so it's more visible than on Excel. Yeah.
And Holly said the same thing in a spreadsheet on Excel or something similar. Raquel, I'm not sure if it works for you to pop something in the chat for what you do. Nathan, if you have...
But can you hear me?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Raquel, and then we'll go to Nathan.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I can hear you.
So I use, for quantitative data, I use a spreadsheet. For qualitative data, I usually like handwriting, and I take a lot of notes in a notebook. And then when I organize it more, like I transcribe it to a Word document.
Great, and then that lets you, once it's in a computer again, you can search for things quickly. Like if you're looking at something like self-esteem, for example, then you can look that word up and search for it and find just where it is, especially if you're dealing with bigger amounts of information. That's great. Thanks, Raquel. Nathan, how about yourself? Do you do a similar thing or something different, or... how do you like to organize information that you've collected or analyze it?
Well, in the olden days, we used to do a lot of forms, like volunteer recruitment forms and what the events, holidays, what they could be available, when are you available, morning, afternoon, evenings, or after schools only, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. But we're kind of leaning away from that. Everyone's finding out you can just get all the same information by just going on Facebook and find out who's mad and what games they want on the comments. You can get a lot of information. Or like, I don't know how many trees I've killed using the worms, but we're using Facebook a lot now instead of the old-fashioned way. Like,
okay, so you go and look for information more on Facebook, and then you just kind of sift through it in your head. Okay. So that's one way to do it. The challenge with getting information from one source like Facebook is just like Adam said, like you're looking perhaps at just the people who use Facebook, or just the people that are brave enough to post comments on Facebook, or just the people who want to complain. So if you're going to be doing an evaluation, you want to look at different ways of doing it. So Kimonopic is put in, you could use a Facebook poll, which might be a little bit more anonymous to do rather than just using comments. So different ways of doing it for sure. Misha, how about yourself? How would you organize and analyze information that you collect?
So we actually use Asana. We have like little ways, like for example, people who are applying to be part of the board on our website, the applications go to Asana, and then like I can review them, so there's like a bit of a flow. But, yeah, like we can gather data like online, I guess, and then like it's organized with a robot, which is fun.
Okay.
But yeah.
So if you've got like 10 applications but you're trying to get evaluation information, like you want to know who's interested in being on the board, you would be collecting that type of information in their application that you could look through it?
Yeah, exactly. They're like, for example, their applications come through me, and then like that's how even when we did when you did interviews and stuff, your application, you had to sign on to this like online application, and then it went to our Asana project management program, and then the ED can like review the candidates, and like we have like a workflow of like, okay, check they did their interview, and then yes they made it, no they didn't, next step, you know, reference check. So I love paper and stuff too with other things, but this was just another example, I guess.
Okay. So I think what you're explaining is more how to use it in a general sense, but maybe from an evaluation perspective, you guys can remember that you can use things like meeting minutes and application forms and records, program records and things like that. So then you're using existing information, but you still have to organize and analyze it in a way that meets what you're trying to do with your evaluation. So just keep that in mind, that if you're doing it for evaluation purposes, it needs to be intentional and connect back to what you're doing. Adam, how about yourself? Do you tend to do what everyone else has said, or do you have a different way of organizing and analyzing data for evaluation?
Yeah, I think there's some similarities. I certainly find quantitative data to be easier to organize. Qualitative data does require some interpretation. But I think, like you were saying, being able to sort of distill those comments down, find common themes, or generalize, categorize is helpful. And I think the other challenge that comes to mind is with a lot of the programs that we're running where we seek feedback, we're dealing with very small sample sizes. So we're wondering if there's any statistical significance to what we're finding. And we often get contradictory. So if it's just ran some sort of a workshop, you know, you could definitely end up with, in a room of 10 people, one person says they wish it was longer and one person says they wish it was shorter. One wishes there was more hands-on, one wishes there was less hands-on. And those sorts of comments. So trying to, while generalizing and categorizing that data, also allowing for a way that you're going to be able to aggregate it so that if you're delivering the same type of workshop 10 times, if you can distill it down to similar themes, then maybe after 10 workshops and 100 participants, more obvious themes in that feedback are starting to emerge. So that's not always possible, and there might be so much variance between one delivery and the next that the feedback's going to differ as well, but trying to just come up with ways that you can generalize it and look for trends that are consistent and robust and really stick out and focus on those ones for actions. I think there's sometimes a tendency to fall into a trap of, you know, one person has one good comment, and because it seems to be a very insightful comment, we attribute too much weight to it. Maybe we don't want to ignore it, but we also can't assume that everyone agrees with it just because it's an insightful and well-articulated comment. They might be the only one holding that opinion, so got to weigh it appropriately.
And that's why I was laughing, smiling when you were saying that over 100 times or 110 participants. I have the same feedback form, you guys might have noticed, for every single learning event, pretty much. And it's what I learn over a cumulative amount of time with those that leads me to make changes or not. So this is perfect. Thank you. Okay, I'm just going to share my screen again here and go back to the slideshow. Okay, so from there to here. So when you organize your data, like it's shown on slide 52 here, the other thing that we haven't talked about that's important to do is you actually need to make notes about what you're doing. Because that goes to what Adam was just saying. If you're going to do the same thing over and over again, you don't want to have a workshop that happens in June and another one in November, and then you treated the information that you've collected differently from one to the next. So if you organize things or change things or make sure that you're writing down what you do, and if there's errors, make sure that you fix it. So sometimes in a survey, you might need to remove incomplete or duplicate information. For example, if I had 41 responses on a survey, but only 24 of them answered all of the questions, I might make the choice to remove other ones. I actually had a survey that I did for Elder Active Brick Health for the Canada 55 Plus Games just before COVID, and there were a number of unanswered questions, so I had to decide how to address those. And I started by looking at sort of the demographics that went along with the people that had not answered them. And there's no right or wrong way to do it, but make sure you write down and record what you did so that it's consistent. There's also lots of different ways to analyze your data. So we've talked a little bit about quantitative data. It's easy because you can count numbers, but you can also calculate percentages. Excel file is great for quantitative. For qualitative, we've talked about themes or using colored sticky notes or looking for patterns or relationships. So think about the different ways that you might analyze your data or make sense. Analyze means making sense of it. So you have to organize it first, and then you try and make sense of it. You need to also be objective. So don't just say, well, this person said this, so it means this, and this person said this, but I'm not going to count that because I don't like that person. So you need to be very objective, and sometimes you have to play around with it a little bit. And does it make sense to show it this way, or if I change how I look at it, like if I look at it from an age perspective versus a gender perspective, does it tell me something different? So you have to sort of play around with it and keep your mind open, because sometimes you might get things popping up that you absolutely didn't expect. So after you've collected and organized and analyzed your data, what you want to do is you want to interpret it. And again, this is very subjective in and of itself. So I like to use, when I interpret data, I like to use what these questions that you can see on the slide here. I like to ask myself, what? So what? And now what? And I've used those questions a lot in many different contexts, mm-hmm. and they really help me kind of make sense of it or interpret it. So I might ask, what do I see? What kinds of activities were implemented? What increases or decreases do I observe? And then from that, I'm going to ask, so what does that mean? Did our program influence the changes that we think we saw? What worked or isn't working or is working? And then I think ahead, so I move further forward, and I think about, now what are the options? Should we keep doing the same thing? Should I change what I'm doing? Do we need to do something different? What does this mean? And that moves us into interpreting the data so we can actually use it. So once the data is interpreted and evaluation findings identified, this is when you start to make use of it. So let me just see what my next slide is. So there's different ways that you might determine how you would use your evaluation data. So you're going to decide if you're going to present it, apply it, share it, who needs to get it, things like that. So now I have a question for you guys. I'm going to ask you about presenting your evaluation findings. And Holly, I think it's working best for you to pop in the chat, and same with Kumanopic maybe. So I'll pop the question in and invite you guys to pop in the chat. And Melanie, I'll invite you to reflect on this question if you feel like jumping in there first. So when you present your evaluation findings, what might you consider? You don't have to, there's three questions here. You don't have to answer every single one. But just think about it. What do you consider? Who might be interested in your evaluation? And what from your evaluation would be appropriate to share? So in about, maybe in 30 seconds, do you have any thoughts on those?
Stakeholders are interested on those findings, that's for sure. Good as city council, and if I think of our community over here, to make future decisions. It's basically the community, especially when it comes to recreation, right? Who may be interested, certain demographics specifically. Depending what kind of survey or evaluation you do. That's all that comes to mind.
Yeah, so different people might be interested depending on what it is that you did, and so it might be appropriate to share with those people that have participated in that. Mm-hmm. And Kumanopic has popped in here, like considering the success. So if people are interested in something, they might want to hear about the success. And again, as Melanie said, that might be your stakeholders. It could include funders, mayor and council, participants. Thanks. Raquel, how about for yourself? If you're presenting evaluation findings, what might you think about? Who would you share them with, or what would be appropriate to share?
I would share it with the members of the organization, stakeholders, the funding agencies, and with the board.
Great. And what would you share with them? Like, what's appropriate to share?
Well, first of all, we have statistics of the programs, like who participated, from which community. Satisfaction.
And your board or your funders might be very interested in that information, whereas the people who participated might be more interested in the success stories, like what Tim and Alfred said. They might like to hear why that worked well, so that might encourage them to continue participating. So there's different reasons or different things that you might share with different people based on different reasons. Thanks, Raquel. Nathan, if you're sharing evaluation findings, who might you share them with, and what might you share?
There's lots to consider, like especially if you're spending other people's money on a program, or if there's pictures or like children playing and whatnot. And I don't know what the rules are about copyright issues or lots of things you might have to consider. Like even if getting parent might come out and say, "Why is my son in the newspaper?" Like, I signed off on that. It was a big event. I just took a picture and gave it to the reporter. Like, you know, there's lots of things to consider.
Mm-hmm.
The public and even my youth leaders, they I noticed on the board, which I found interesting, I always leave everything to the youth leaders for after school events. And they, if you have problems, don't post on Facebook. Talk with us. Keep it in the office, don't make it public, like don't rant or complain about the staff at the arena or whatever, or kids, especially. Like if a kid's being bad, don't post it on your personal wall. I found that interesting. I was like, that's a good point. Like, I guess there was an issue one time and they put a stop to it. So there's lots of stuff to consider.
Yeah.
Every situation is different.
Yeah, so you have to share appropriately. That's right. Thank you. Nisha, I'll come back to you so you can see what the question is, because I see that you've dropped off and stuff. So, Adam, I'll just read the question out so Nisha can hear it again, and then I'll ask you your thoughts. What do we need to consider when presenting evaluation findings, and who might be interested? And we shared some of those, and Holly's added a couple more in the chat. And what would be appropriate to share? Any thoughts, Adam?
Yeah, I think this relates, but just coming back to, you know, we have to establish the reason, the rationale for evaluation in the first place. And that's going to inform what it is we're evaluating, how we're evaluating, and what the report is going to look like. And, you know, I always relate it to the education world, and we talk about assessments of learning and assessments for learning. And the key difference there being, you know, an assessment for learning is something done that is formative so that we can improve, as opposed to report on the current state of things. So an evaluation for learning might be with internal goals, where we're just trying to optimize the way that we're doing something, making sure that we're meeting our own goals as well as we can. And those wouldn't necessarily be reported externally in the same way that an evaluation of the program is intended to give that sort of final report, final snapshot, this is what was accomplished. So the timing of it and the intention of it's going to make a big difference in terms of what's reported to whom.
Yeah, so you used a couple of words that we introduced in the glossary, formative and summative, as different types of evaluation. And Nisha shared an example of a formative one that you're talking about, you know, maybe as things to help you improve internal processes. So we talked about looking at how a board's functioning, how it recruits members, and how it can do that better. So that's a really great example. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that, Adam. And yes, you're exactly right. Anything that we present should link back to the purpose, and that's why for some people, if your purpose was maybe a little vague, I said you really need to be clear in either your statement of purpose for the evaluation or your evaluation goal, because people are going to want to know why you're doing it. And if you can't clearly explain that, it creates some confusion too. Nisha, any thoughts on what you need to consider when presenting evaluation findings? Who might be interested in them, or what might be appropriate to share?
I don't know if I have anything really more than what's been talked about, but yeah, just no, I don't have anything else to add. I don't need to go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to just pick up on something that Nathan mentioned, and Nathan said something that led me to think about what do we do if the results of our evaluation perhaps might make us not look very good. Like we might consider that they're negative, or you know, maybe we didn't do a good job at something, and that's what the evaluation says. You know, how do we share that? Because you have to be careful. You don't want to say, you know, our project was terrible and we didn't accomplish what we wanted to do, end of story, because then nobody's going to fund it again. So I think that you have to, you know, present things in a way that might come across positively. And I'll just, one example that was in the news this past week was the city of Whitehorse is being under pressure from the territorial NDP party to provide free bus transportation at a cost of like $1.7 or higher million dollars a year. Well, they spent a lot of time talking to user groups, especially the groups that might benefit from free buses, and they actually found out that the issue is there's not enough buses, so people don't want to use them. It's not that they can't afford to pay for them. So they don't use them because there's not the frequencies and the routes aren't there. So they come back and they said, and really good CBC report, that they're going to invest that money instead of in free transport and improving access to transport. And it sounds like there's general agreement that that's a good solution. So it could have come across as you don't want to support free transport, you don't want to support people who are low income. But the way they presented it and how the time that they spent learning about it came across well. So that was that's something to keep in mind, because you're not always going to get these glowing reports from your evaluation. And hopefully you do get things that you can actually use. So think about your evaluation results should be presented and shared purposefully. There should be intention behind it. There should be a reason. It should be who it's for, what you need to share. You don't need to share everything with everybody. So findings might be part of a report to funders, or you can also use your evaluation findings to promote your programs. Like Raquel, your findings from walking programs are a great example of how to further promote your programs. So really, when you choose what you're going to share, and you share those findings, consider who you will need to share it with and what they might need or be interested in. And then share your findings in a way you can afford, because there is a cost to it. A really fancy, printed, glossy, colorful report, pretty expensive. But a series of social media posts might not cost you anything near that. So there's different ways of sharing and presenting. Catch your audience's attention by being creative in the ways that you present your evaluation findings. So before we wrap up, I do have one more question for you guys. And we started with Melanie that time, so I'm going to start with Raquel this time. And what are some creative ways that we can present our findings? And I did give you two examples, a glossy report or a social media post. Raquel, any other thoughts? Maybe you share one so we don't run out of ideas before we get to Melanie at the end of the circle. So. Go ahead, Raquel.
In a presentation.
A presentation? Like in person?
Like in person presentation. Yeah.
With coffee and cookies?
With coffee and cookies.
Okay. That's great. Thank you. Yeah. Nathan, how about yourself? What's a good way to share or a creative way to present something that you've learned, your findings?
I remember these kids keep doing this Archon thing where they take a picture of themselves and their favorite things and put it on the wall, and it just becomes a big, big puzzle. So they keep doing that. I find that creative. I like it.
That is great. Like photos tell one photo actually, what's the saying? One photo shows a million words or whatever it is. So there's some saying around that. So you can imagine 100 photos on a wall give you a really great picture. So thank you. Misha, how about for yourself? What are some creative ways or one creative way that you could present your evaluation findings?
I wish I could say something more like intelligent, but what keeps coming up is like an interpretive dance. That's gonna be my answer for today.
Awesome. I'd like to see what that looks like. Thank you. Adam, how about yourself? What's a creative way to present evaluation findings? Oh, you're muted. I'm still muted. Uh-oh.
Hello?
Let me check. Oh, now I can hear you.
Oh, you can hear me. Okay. Yeah, if it works for the type of evaluation you're doing, having program participants involved. So I like Nathan's idea of using pictures, but having testimonials or stories of them to just come in and share what their experience of it was to get that sort of that firsthand experience of the program can be quite impactful, I think.
That's great. Thank you. So those personal stories. And again, we're talking in cookies, right? And someone else takes pops in the chat. He said a presentation from PowerPoint for council and stakeholders. So yeah, like a PowerPoint is a little bit better than a written report because you can summarize the key points to the report. So that's really helpful. And Holly, you go ahead if you want and post in the chat. And Melanie, what's a creative way that you might present your findings?
I'm thinking of like sometimes I see these short illustrated videos posted maybe on social media or YouTube that can be used for any kind of presentations and that make it sometimes easier also to, for people to understand and to pay attention. So, yeah.
Yeah, and there's lots of ways to use video.
You're gone. I don't hear you anymore.
I bet it was just me too. I'm glad.
Oh my, something happened.
Come back.
Oh, I was in presenting.
Can you hear us?
Is that a sort of a game to test our patience and how we do?
We're supposed to go on longer answers now. To see if we use the time effectively or not.
Okay. Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, I gotta mute this other one. I'm getting feedback, so my apologies. Are you getting feedback?
No, I do.
Okay, I'll keep talking then and just not listen to myself. Okay, so those are some great ideas and examples of ways that you can creatively present your evaluation findings. And with RPE, one of the things we actually did was we created a video, and not a cheap way to do it, but it worked too. And Misha, just coming back to your idea of dance, I have seen examples of dance or poetry or things like that that express what people have learned through things, so that's a good example as well. Okay, that might sound a bit better to me. Sorry, I need to hear myself twice. So as I've mentioned many times over the past few weeks, 4 weeks actually, a good evaluation really can make a difference in the work that we do and in our communities. And by sharing what you've actually learned through evaluation, what you can do is you can help other people, whether it's mayor and council, stakeholders, your board, or your community, recognize the powerful impact that recreation can have on personal health, on community and environmental well-being, and on quality of life. So in your role as recreation leaders, I encourage you to prioritize evaluation by building it into your budgets and into your work plans. And try and design evaluation so that you address real community issues and that you capture ways to solve those issues or address those issues and also capture the benefits of recreation. So you have a couple of required learning activities to work on. I think most people are halfway through the four RLAs. If you're not sure, stay on the call, and I will explain to each of you where you're at. Raquel, I did see you posted your third week, so I'll look at that after we hang up here. And there is the RLA for week four. You can do it at any point in time. You don't have to wait till you finish the other ones because it's a personal reflection. It shouldn't take you as much time as working on an evaluation plan. So if you want to do it after we hang up and have it done and out of the way, you're more than welcome to do it. But please do, if you haven't posted part A of your evaluation plan, please share that first, then consider my feedback and consider reviewing, revising, adjusting your evaluation questions, and then work on part B that way. If you need extra time, you do have two more weeks. There is no conference calls on Wednesdays for the next 2 weeks, so our next call will actually be on April 10th. And for the next learning event, the next advanced learning event on Wednesdays, it begins on April 8th. But I'm going to be traveling, so what I've opted to do, and hopefully I'd like your feedback on this one too, is to have one conference call and one recorded video. So there'll only be the conference call on April 10th, and then there isn't another one for a couple of weeks. So you do have time to work on this learning event, work on your required learning activities for evaluation. If you have any questions, please do stay on the line if you can, or reach out to me at another point in time. I'm leaving on April 1st, so I'll be on a kind of different time zone after that point in time. So if you have questions, maybe try and get a hold of me before then. That doesn't mean you can't reach out to me afterwards. Just send me an email and we'll find a good time to connect, either through video or also I do use things like WhatsApp and Messenger and things like that when I'm away too. So thank you so much. We're done a few minutes early, so those of you who have meetings starting in 4 minutes, you're good to go. And if you have questions, just stay on the line or stay on or message me for another time. So I'll end the recording if it will let me do so. Merci, chou, merci, guanashish, nakarnik, thank you. And happy end of March.